from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
In this episode, GU Economics alum Sanaida Moya joins Andrew and Stephanie to discuss Jesuit education and its impact on her life. Ms. Moya has long been involved in the government of the Caribbean country Belize and served as the first female mayor of Belize City.
Thanks for joining us so much. I've heard, and I want to make sure I'm saying your name, Zenaida, right?
Yes, Zenaida Moya. Actually, it's Zenaida because it's pronounced Spanish.
Okay.
My dad is Spanish, so it's pronounced Spanish, but it's spelled with a Z, but it's like an S, you know?
I like it. I like it. It's a beautiful name. This is just a casual conversation. We generally connect with alum that are doing cool things or people that are involved with Gonzaga, sometimes students. And actually, Randy Bennett was the one, and he's retired now, but the podcast was launched. He's like, you got to talk to Sanaida. She's a big deal. She was the first female mayor of Belize City, of all things. So, so very cool. So I guess my first question for you is, how did you find Gonzaga, of all places, from Belize?
Okay, well, I won a scholarship, but let me just tell you a little background with that scholarship. I'm Catholic, right? So I'm Catholic. I attended a Catholic primary school. And then, you know, I won an academic scholarship. I went to Palote High School. That's a Palatine High School. And, you know, I was very involved in school life, you know. So it wasn't only school for me. It was being in different clubs and being head of different organizations at school. And then always on the dean's list still, though. I still made it to being on the dean's list. Then I won another academic scholarship. And then that's when I went to the Jesuit Junior College called St. John's Junior College, right? So in Belize, we have Jesuit schooling is one of the big deal. We have other denominational schools. However, the Jesuit is very much there, you know? And so it was, so I had won an academic scholarship there. And I, again, always on the dean's list. I was, every semester I was on the dean's list, but I was also head of different organizations, right? And at that time, I wasn't looking at scholarships. You know, I'm just one of those persons that, you know, I was a journalist. So I was the lead journalist. I was a copy editor. I was the editor, you know. I won penmanship award. I was on a dance club, you know. I was in a drama club. I was a lead actress. I was head of, you know, we have different houses on campus. And so I was the head of Lux House. So it was based on all those different activities and being so much in, you know, not only focusing on school, but also doing other extracurricular activities on campus life that I won a scholarship. And there was this different Jesuit who taught me. And Dr. Zupes was one of them, Jack Zupes. I loved him. He taught me calculus. And he taught me different, I mean, I had other, you know, professors. I had other professors, but he was one of my very close friends. I call him friends because we were always talking and back and forth, you know. And so when I was, you know, in the run for the scholarships, I believe when I won it, he pushed for me to go to Gonzaga University because I wanted to study economics. That was what I concentrated on. I was concentrating in, and he knew I wanted to study economics, and they felt that Gonzaga University had a good economics program. And of course they did. John Beck and all of those guys, you know, who I love dearly. They were
John Beck is he's retired, but he still teaches. He
Yes.
so he's still hanging around
He's
a little.
awesome. He's awesome. Him and I were very good friends. And it's yeah, even up to when I graduated, we were still in communication and so forth. But yeah, so it was based on that, on that level, and just being able to they looked at my different student life and what I contributed. I got different awards and certificates for different services, and along with my academic, how I did, and that's what helped me to go to Gonzaga University. But as I said, I know it had to do with Father Jacques Zupes, because he's the one. He said, Senaida, he said, Gonzaga University, after the university, that's the best university for you to go. I was like, no, I'll be honest, listen good, my Aunt Jenny she lived in Los Angeles, and so Marymount University is right there. And of course, who doesn't want to go with their favorite aunt in the world? But I listened to the advice of Father Zupes, and that's how I ended up at Gonzaga University, and I loved it. I actually loved it.
That's great. That's great. No, so first impressions of Spokane. You're coming from Belize, tropical paradise. You land in Spokane in August. Like what are you thinking at first?
Well, I had, I had traveled outside of Belize, but mainly to Mexico City, Cuernavaca, Veracruz, where my aunt and her family lives. And that was my first time there, and I liked the weather. It was, it was still okay. It wasn't too hot. It was okay because I could still wear. I remember at the time I still had on, like, my first day during orientation. That's when I told you I met my friend Anna Kapoor, who was from Bosnia, and my different friends. And so it was, the weather was cool. I liked it. I immediately, I'm a very friendly person. I'm not shy. I'm the opposite of shy. And so it was very easy for me to, I love the atmosphere. I love that it seemed peaceful. The student seems very nice. And it was just different. It was different for me, and I welcomed it, because what they tell us, like, when we, like, for example, it's through Jesuit CAS. So it's Jesuit and the Central American Scholarship Program. So it's something whereby they had already given us a little orientation to remind us that we're like ambassadors going forward. We're not just someone going there. We're still representing our country. And so yeah, I enjoyed it. Everything looked nice. I like the older looking buildings. It looked like a little colonial, of course, not like the colonial we have, but it had like its own, I don't know if you guys would call it colonial. You guys did come from England one spell still, So but it's, I like that look. And of course, places like Jepson and all that, it's newer, was more modern. But I like that, and I was a runner, so I like to run. So I also like the fact that I could run indoor. I used to run along, but I also like the fact that I could also run indoor when it snowed. So I really liked it.
Well, good. Yeah, it's I mean, we think of, they call it College Hall now. I think back then,
College Hall,
it was
okay.
the ad building, right? Or the admin
Yes, yes. Okay,
building.
the College Hall, yes. So they, and then the canal and all that. And and then even while I had a full scholarship, I'll be upfront with you, I had a full scholarship for everything. But I still worked, I chose to work really at the concession stand with Marriott. And so when they had basketball games and so forth, I used to also work there. I used to make extra money. So So I just loved everything about Spokane. I really loved it, and I just loved the people. They were very nice people, and I just loved it. At that time, it wasn't a lot of people of color there, and I, as you can see, I'm brown skin. And I, but it wasn't a big deal for me because I'm mixed, right? So, I'm not like it's, and I have to tell you this, right? Because race is something. And when I went there, my dad is full Spanish, right? His entire family, right? And his family looks like you, you guys. So that's how he looks. My grandfather had the white, tall white man with blue eyes. He looks nothing like me. But I do have brothers with green eyes and those things, but that's different. So they don't look like me, right? But I mix my mom, yes, she does have Spanish in her, but she's mainly Indian and she has black in her, Creole. So I'm very mixed and a bit of Maya. And going there, I was so used to being mixed, so it wasn't a big deal. However, I recall when I used to go, and I remember I was at in the Cog eating, and there was these groups. So people, they would sit in their cliques and things like that. I was very open. I would be all over the place. And I recall there was this clique, but it was they have the Ahana, right? So they were not necessarily Ahana, but they were we only had like a few blacks on campus. I think it was like a few, like nine, for example. It was very limited, just a few. And some of them were my friends, and but they were some of there were a few of them who were from, I believe, New York, because the New Yorkers are different from those from the West Coast, from California and so forth. I'm just telling you like it is. And
I love it. I love
I
it. Well,
recall.
Andrew's from here and I'm from Los Angeles, so we're
You're
from the West Coast.
okay. And where are you from?
I'm from
Where are
Los
you from?
Angeles.
You're Los Angeles, and he's from what?
Spokane.
Spokane. Okay. So Los Angeles, they were very friendly, very, very friendly, very nice, wonderful. The ones from New York were a bit different, and I remember that they wanted me to be in their group, and their group was they would sit in a around a table, and it would only be comprised of just blacks, right? And they wanted me to sit, and every day they sat there, they didn't mingle. For me, that's, because I mingle, I'm mixed, I have family who's black, white, it's different for me. Brown, it doesn't matter. And I remember that was one of the things that stuck out, that happened. And I had to tell them that, you know what, I understand. And politely I did it. I understand that, you guys, that's what you choose to do, but I'm representing my country. I'm representing Belize. And I can't always every day just sit in one clique, I'm someone who will be mingling, and because I do have friends all over, and I don't look at color. Color isn't the basis of a friendship for me. Yes, it is there and we can see it, but it will never be the basis of friendship or me, being able to communicate with anybody. And so that was something that I felt, that Spokane at the time being very, white, that I could see why they would do that, but it wasn't, to me, it wasn't the best thing to do. But not everybody did that, because the students from Alaska, my friend Nikki and Kevin, and she was from Alaska. Then you had my friends from California. They were totally not like that. They were in the basketball team. Two of them were, and it was just different. So I think it's just different sides. One from the East had different probably experience from those from the, and I wouldn't say the entire the West had different experience from New York. Because let me just not spout out and say everybody from the East. So that was something that at that time, and then even on the basketball team, you would look at the basketball team, and I remember at the time I had two of my friends on the basketball team, right? And two blacks. They were I think from California, and it was mainly white. I know I see there's a difference, you have more persons of color on it. So everything has changed. But I welcome that, and I never saw that as something difficult. As a matter of fact, all my professors were awesome, with the exception of one. Won't give name. One, he was very racist against me, and that kind of threw me back because I wasn't used to that, And I remember I stopped going to school because of that. Yeah, I didn't know how to deal with it, so I remember I stopped going to school. Completely, I stopped, and then I said, "You know what, Sonaida? You're on a scholarship. You can't afford to lose your scholarship because it was hurting me." But it was, I wasn't used to it. You come from Belize, and everybody loves you, and I didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't really teach me how to deal with that. But as I told you, it was just one professor. It was only him, nobody else. Everybody was just awesome. And I think that's also what helped me. So yes, it threw me back, and I was like a bit discouraged and didn't want to go to school anymore. And that's when I was really looking at Marymount, Loyola Marymount, really looking at it. Because I said, when I go there, there'll be different looking people, and nobody will be discriminatory towards me. But then afterwards, I got back and I said, I'm gonna go into your class. I'm just gonna, yes, I did miss a number of classes, so I was on the verge of, it was gonna be problems. And so when I went back, I just made sure I finished his class, and I still passed it. But I had missed other classes because it just threw me off. But back then, again, that was between 93 and 95. So it's a while ago. It's a while ago. So I'm sure everything has changed since then.
Well,
Years
especially
ago,
campus, you
31
would,
years.
if you've been back recently, it looks a lot different. A lot of new buildings, a lot of
Very nice.
I mean,
I
there's
haven't been back. I was back. I did go back after that because I went more than once, and then I also went for my friends there, because I was a transfer student, remember, from St. John's Junior College. So I went back for graduation for some of my friends, Celeste Robbins, and just a lot of my friends who graduated the following year and a year after. I went back for their Mary Zetic. A number of them, I went back for their graduation. Yeah.
Now, did you? So that was the early mid 90s. Did you follow the Zags in
Of
basketball as they kind of.
course, hell yes. I see that we went to the dance. I see that we almost made it. They call us the bridesmaid. But I'm always hoping that we will win. I think we have it in us. I'm also a Chicago Cubs fan, and if you know anything about Chicago Cubs.
Oh, you see, I'm wearing a Padres hat. The Cubs just beat the Padres, so
So you know what? Everybody, they will get their time. They will get their time, and I know that the Zags will get their time. It's only a matter of time. They will. They've come so close.
I
They've come
know.
so very close, just to touch it. But they'll get there, and I will be one of them. So every year, yes, I do watch it. Even during COVID lockdown, I saw how it was. It was they couldn't have fans. I believe they had them just in a, in a thing. It was kind of weird, but yeah, I've watched them ever since. I love
Really
them.
weird, really weird. Yeah, we I believe too, Sonaya. So yes, someday, someday. And I mean, you know what it was like back then, right? It was a small scale operation, you know.
Yes, no,
So
it's huge. It's huge, and I see a lot of things happening. I see back then, even back then, we used to look at Newsweek and used to look at the different magazines and to see how high we were in standing, in academic standing and in standing in different areas. And so I see the climb, you know, I see the steady climb. I see us really, you know, securing our spot as a university. And so that has been welcoming. You know, I really appreciate, because every time when people ask me, listen, I won two scholarships. I won for that, and then afterwards I had one another academic scholarship. And I could have gone to any university. I could have gone back to Gonzaga University, but I said, you know what, let me go somewhere else just for the experience and the atmosphere. And I had chosen University of Detroit Mercy,
Yeah,
you
this
know,
is good.
again, because I'm also a Jesuit, and you know, I was a huge Detroit Pistons fan. Yes,
Absolutely.
huge Detroit Pistons fan. I've been to a Sonics game and so forth, and hockey game for you guys, but Pistons was my team when it came to basketball and the Bad Boys, you know. And so that's why I went there. But the point is that I see the operation, and I really love what has been done, you know. And that's why I said I'm gonna be one of the, I follow Gonzaga University Bulldogs, and I follow the, not only the males, I follow the females. I follow them. I'm one of them that's right there cheering and putting up my little signs, my little
That's
emojis
great.
and all that. I'm one of those people, you know, and I'm heart in every story and their thing. So I'm one of those people who's liking and so forth. So I follow it, and I'm just hoping that things will happen, you know, this coming March.
Yeah, us too. So you graduate Gonzaga, you go to Detroit Mercy right after that, and then did you head back to Belize?
No, what happened is when I finished with my bachelor's, I chose to stay in Gonzaga until I did another semester, like just a summer semester.
Yeah, we call that a victory lap. Yeah,
All
go
right, so
ahead.
listen, so this is what I'm gonna tell you. So just to stay in the US, I had to like sign up for a class. But I didn't really attend that class, really. I can say that right now. Yes, I did attend one, a few, a couple classes.
Yeah, exam day.
Yeah. Well, that was just a time for me. My friend Mary and I, we went to Portland, Oregon. We went to Seattle, Washington. Went to Utah, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We were just driving different places, you know. British Columbia. We were just different places traveling. But I did go back to try and make sure, you know, I did the exam, you know. So, but I didn't know that was gonna count towards my overall grade, you know. I didn't know that was gonna count towards my overall grade, because I thought once you finish in May, that's it. So if I just took that little extra class on the side just to like use it just to stay in the country and enjoy, you know, finally. But I didn't know they were gonna add that too. Nobody told me, and I didn't, I guess I just didn't know, you know. Had I known, I would have made sure I attended class.
Well, it was worth it. What you got to do some traveling. It was worth it, right?
Yes, I did. But the point is, I went home in June, and then but I started working, and so I worked for a year and a half. And then that year and a half, you know, during that time, I applied for an OAS scholarship, an Organization of American States. And so it was based on that I submitted my application. And you know, I was, you know, lucky, I guess. I was, you know, the different professors, I think there were like eight doctors who reviewed our applications, and I was very pleased that they selected me. And that's how I won the scholarship, and I went. So I did take a year and a half before going there.
Oh,
Yeah, great.
fantastic.
And then when I went back, when I finish my MBA, again with concentration in economics, I went home, and then I continued working. You know, I work for the government of Belize, I worked for the government of Belize. I was working at the Ministry of Economic Development and Trade, and then Ministry of just Economic Development, and then Ministry of National Development. So I'm just somebody who likes economics, and I like helping. I'm more of a developmental person. I want to develop. I wanted to develop my country. I had gotten opportunities to stay in the US and work. And I did have, some of my classmates who wanted me to stay. I had one who wanted to marry me so I could stay. But I think he liked me, and that's not gonna work. I was using that to say, okay, we can get married. I'm like, it's not gonna work because I knew he liked me. So I know there was a caveat I was gonna fall for that one. So I came home. No, I came home.
At what point did you enter politics, right? When, how did you decide to? I mean, I don't know how big Belize is or Belize City, but it's not a big country. But I'm imagining Belize City is the city.
What happened is our country is one is it's a Central American, it's situated on the mainland of Central America, but it's also a Caribbean country. All right, so we're very we like I'm speaking English, and that's my main language. We speak Creole too, but English and Creole, that's our main languages. But a large population do speak Spanish, and but we identify more with being Caribbean, at least persons like me who's from Belize City. Right, so I'll tell you the ones who are like because we're bordered by Guatemala and by Mexico. So Mexico to the north, Guatemala to the east, Guatemala to the west, Guatemala to the south, and then the Caribbean Sea is at the east of us, right? So I live at this moment I'm speaking to you, I live literally right next to the sea. I'm watching the sea.
How
So
amazing.
it's very beautiful, by the way. We have awesome weather at the moment. So I was a trade union leader. I've always been in the member of the trade union from I started work. I was a member of that trade union with my work, Christian Workers Union. Then, because I worked at Social Security Board at first, and then I went to work with government. Government was had their own service union, which is a public service union, and for the Association of Public Service Senior Managers. And so I was a member of that at different levels, liaison officer. Then I was, I held different posts until I became the second vice president of the Public Service Union and the Vice President of the Association of Senior Managers, which is another union. And it was based on that. We were having certain issues with the government at the time. I was a senior manager, but the rank and file workers, public officers, they were having issues with the government at the time as it regards their increase in salary, right? And while it wasn't really affecting me because I was a senior manager at that time, we get different perks. You get different perks, different allowances, and that's different. You get paid at a different scale. That's different perks. So I didn't have to get into the fight or to help them in any way because I wasn't, I didn't have to. But a lot of them were my friends, and I remember they asked me, they said, Sanaida, they said, we need your expertise to, they wanted me to review the proposed budget of the government, right? The budget that would be for the following fiscal year. And because I was an economist at the time also, and so they said, I told him, sure, I'm gonna I can do that for you, and I reviewed the budget, the entire government budget. And I went ahead and I proposed different, I looked at different, areas where certain weaknesses were and where they could cut certain expenses, increase certain revenues. I looked at different areas that could make it work for them to be able to get their increase, salary increase, and their benefits. And I submitted that proposal, and to them, they were enthused, they were happy. And they asked me to be their main negotiator, right? On the we had a there was a negotiated team, a budget working group team that had the financial secretary, who's the head of the finance ministry, and you had one and two different ministers also on that, and then you had I the a rep from the Chamber of Commerce representing the private sector, and then you had someone who had to represent the workers. And so I was elected to represent them. And I had two other person, but I was a lead negotiator on behalf of the public service union. And so it was based on that. I presented my recommendations and I showed how it could work. And the financial sector at the time, she was only mainly speaking with me. My other two colleagues were there, but I guess she saw me as an economist, and she saw, I guess, you see that you're talking to somebody that can speak with you, on your level. And so they still weren't satisfied. They didn't want to give in. They accepted certain things, certain of the recommendations, but some of the areas that we showed, oh, they were intense, real leakages that they needed to close up, because it was, fiscal incentives, right? In Belize, they offer quite a bit of fiscal incentives for individuals who want to come into the country. And not only that, for people who want to start up businesses and so forth. And those fiscal incentives are fine. But when you have fiscal incentives, which is also called development concessions, let's say you have those concessions, let's say for 15 years or 20 years, even up to 25 years, when those years finish, they're supposed to finish, right? Because a regular Belizean who has to compete against those individuals don't get any fiscal incentives, zero. But you have individuals coming in who will get sometimes 20 years, 25 years, they even went to 30 years concession. So it's not a level playing field. And so I saw how some of these were still going ahead. Concession duration, it had already, it ought to have been terminated. It had elapsed. And so I looked at some of those and I said, you know what, these are certain areas that these individuals, they need to start to come on, the tax roll, just like any other Belizean. They've gotten a concession, we appreciate it. They've gotten all different whatever benefits, they get to bring in so many items, duty free and everything they ask for. Well, certain things were not, in certain countries, and I will say in certain countries, including my country, certain individuals, they can get away with certain things depending on who they speak with. And I saw that. And as a head of department, I knew that could happen. And they were not willing to close up certain gaps, right? They were not willing to close up those gaps, which would have enabled the public officers, the rank and file public officers, to be able to get, what was due them, And it was based on that that I was one of the main person who led protests, nationwide protests and shutdowns of the government and of all utility companies after negotiation fell through. We had a press conference We gave them the time period, and this is after many different negotiations for them to really, do right by the people, and they didn't do it. And so it was based on that I was pushed into politics. I didn't want to run, but they wanted me to run. You had the opposition government who was begging me to run. You had another new party who was begging me to run. You had one who wanted to farm based on my face and based on me being the lead. I told you I'm a confident person, right? So I've always been a leader. Everywhere I've gone, even after, I've always led. And so even at Gonzaga University, you guys don't know, I was the I wasn't only on this I was also the vice president of the International Student Union and the president of the International Student Union, assistant for the there was a voluntary. We used to volunteer for the homeless and things like that. So even for that, and also to write, for the newspaper. So that leadership skill was there, and I utilized that. They asked me to run. I didn't accept at the first instance. I waited until months until afterwards. I agreed to run. And so it wasn't based on me wanting to run. It was based on the people. And when I say the people, it was literally the people begging me to run. So it was based on that I decided to run for office, no? Because they had also written that, the if like a champion did not show up to run, they say the incumbent government was going to remain in office. When you're an incumbent, you have certain benefits. You have pros and cons to you because people are looking at your record. So if you're not doing well, it can hurt you, but also you have resources. So you can draw from the particular resources and you can use it to your own benefit. And so they said, you know what, they really need someone who can really pull a victory. And that's where I came in because I was a face on TV just about every day. I was always on the news. I was always on talk shows. I was just a household name, and so that's why they took me out of the dugout, and they told me it's about time. You need to come do some pinch hitting, and that's what I
Yeah.
did.
Well,
Yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah, I was wondering about maybe your time at Gonzaga and how that influenced your life in public service. Do you feel like there was certain values of your upbringing with the Jesuit Catholic faith or even your time
Yes,
here?
it was. It certainly did. Gonzaga University was very reflective of the Jesuit principles and the way of life that I appreciate. I told you growing up, I've always attended Jesuit schools and Jesuit-run schools. And so, I used to go to church every Sunday. Let me pronounce it, Aloysius.
Yeah, oh yeah,
Aloysius.
yeah.
And so I used to attend there every Sunday. I used to whatever it is, I would try to attend. And I think that just giving service, as I mentioned earlier, the that service-oriented part of me. So, for example, there was this group that we used to We would go to the like there's a huge Spokane Conference Center. I'm not sure if I'm getting the correct name here.
Yeah.
And we would go there. I even have pictures. I probably should have had it to show you guys, whereby we would go there like waitresses, we'd have on our long black pants and white shirt, and we'd go there and we'd serve. And the funds used to go towards helping the homeless. I remember even in the snow ones, more than once actually, but it was even on the Spokane, the newspaper, the Spokane, what is it called? Herald?
Spokesman Review.
Spokesman Review,
Yeah.
yeah. So we were on there, in the snow on a little, so you have the little box. So like we're in box and we're living in this box in the snow. And of course, I was well bundle up,
Yeah, right.
well bundle up. Hey, I'm from the Caribbean, come on. But so it was there that it continued, and Gonzaga offered those also, in a very humanitarian manner, and it allowed me to continue to understand that, it's not only, when you're at home, you ought to be helping. You could be abroad and you can still try to do your part, because as much as the USA is a very wealthy country, there are, pockets of, suffering in particular neighborhoods. There are downtrodden people as well. So that helped. We also used to, in many different, they were some of my dorm mates in particular. We were very much a group that used to look out for areas where we could be of service in particular areas. So we would go together, Lincoln Dorm was a girls' dorm. I'm not sure if it's still a girls' dorm, but it was a girls', it still is. Okay. So
It's dorm. I don't think it's, I think they, there's actually no students in it this year. But it's the dorm's still there. I don't know if it's all female. I'm not sure of that.
okay. So my time, it was a girls' dorm, and so we would like, so I like I have a photo with like about at least five, six of us together. We're going off to do our thing to help. But yeah, it impacted me also in a manner that I told you how nice people from Spokane were, and I do believe they are still. I'm not sure. I hope so. But they were such
Some
I
are,
some are,
now.
some are.
Yeah.
Because even I remember I used to go to a place called Java Junkies,
Okay.
and they used to also have who am I forgetting, the basketball player who is very well known,
John Stockton.
John Scott.
Yeah.
He had, what is his place that he has a place where you could go drink?
Yeah, Jack and Dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I used to go to Jack and Dance's. They didn't allow me to drink at the time though. I
Yeah.
couldn't drink. But I snuck in there a couple of times, and then but normally it would go, I would go to this place called Java Junkies, and people would be there in green hair and leather clothes, leather jackets, and motorcycling. It was very different, but I loved it. I loved it. And it wasn't liquor I was drinking. I was drinking like coffee. Yes, there was Starbucks, but I was drinking coffee. And I just, it was just the people. I love Spokane, and I always tell them that I'm sure everything has changed, but I had been to many states in the US, right? I've traveled over 40 countries. I stopped counting. But my favorite place and states, and I've been to so many states, I can't even count how many states all over the US. And Spokane, what I loved about Spokane too was like when you were driving towards Spokane, like nearing there, even when you pass the freeway, are you going near? I love a lot of the trees. And that's one of the things that I really, really loved about Spokane, the lots of trees. And I used to always tell everybody, I used to tell them, you know what? I said, Spokane is one of the most beautiful place. They have one of the most beautiful landscape. And I mean, I'm hoping that some of the, I'm sure a lot of the trees are there, because I do know there's environmentalists everywhere. And so I used to be in charge of the, different environmental projects as well. But yeah, it impacted me in a positive way, in every way. I always tell you, I always say there's only that one incident, and there wasn't any other. I just love, and even the students, everybody, the professors, they were just awesome. And I always tell you, economics, I've always been somebody who, yes, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I can say this now. The academic life and studying is important. Yes, it has been important for me. But for me, what has always come first, and maybe I shouldn't say that because people will hear, is the extracurricular life, the community life, the student life, the campus life, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely,
And
absolutely.
that has always been, I've a lot of times I would like be putting in my time to, you know, lead in different groups and, you know, just giving my time to different organizations. And but I think it's because, you know, that has that quality, that service. You see, when I studied at St. John's Junior College, it's men and women for others, right? That's our motto, men and women for others. And that comes from the Jesuit philosophy, right? And men and women for others. And so that has always been a part of who I am, you know, and it has never changed.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I keep hearing this theme about the importance of friendship in your life, whether it's
Yes.
showing up for your friends or supporting your friends, and maybe even how you got into politics as a result of that friendship. But I would be very curious to know what is the basis of friendship for you? How do you build these important friendships?
Anywhere I go, I always feel that you don't know what people are going through. You know, it's a funny thing that when I went to Gonzaga University, I told you my friend Anna, she had fled Bosnia, right? And I had other friends who, you know, many of them had their own stories. And sometimes you know, you'd meet people and they would be a bit standoffish, or you would feel that they're a bit standoffish, but it's just what they're going through in their lives. And I've been somebody who, I think it's because I had such a loving father. My father was an awesome man. My gosh, he was very church going. He was a sacristan. He was just, I used to go to church morning and night, and it was just, you know, different parts of the church I was always a leader in. And so I recall, and I still do, that people, like, I'm always somebody for the underdogs. So when I see different individual who I feel is an underdog, I'm always somebody who will try to be there for them. You know, you have some people who are shy, and if nobody approaches them and is nice to them, you know they're gonna stay there and never speak. They won't speak. They're introverts. Now, I'm still an introvert. I don't consider myself an extrovert, which is very, you know, and you know, it's something that I look at and I say, yes, when I have to be popular to win politics, when I've always won, I've never lost in any politics, in any, and I've run for many different, you know, elections. I've always won, but it's you being there for those individuals who might not be open enough or brave enough to get out there, and I've been able to build friendships. And I will look at individuals who are they, who can just walk around. And yes, those individuals are important also, but I don't go for those individuals. I go for the persons who might need somebody as a friend. And that's just me. I don't know if that will ever change, because that's just me, you know? So it's that I look at friendship as being something that is meaningful, that is helpful, and it changes individuals, because you know it's not cliche to say that You know, some people, just a smile can help them. You know, they may, you may be looking at somebody, and I, you know, I don't want to sound so cliche, but somebody that would have been looking to like walk away from life. And just by you being there, just by you saying, hey, I'm Sunaida, you know, hey, what's your name? Hey, how's it going? You know, just by you doing that, or you just smile, hi, how are you? You know, how's it going? Something simple like that could make the difference. That person would have been thinking something difficult, you know, or just saying, man, I want to go somewhere. So I can't deal with this place. So I can't go through with these. Oh, these people are bullying me. These people, there's nobody here. There's no one who looks like me. There's no one who thinks like me. There's no one, you know, of my county or my city, my town. And then you'll have somebody like me who will help you to change your mindset, you know, and be happy and love yourself again. So yes, it's extremely important, and it's just in me, you know, it's just in me.
That's
Yep.
wonderful.
Can you talk about a little bit about being a woman leader, right? First mayor of Belize and the
Yes.
challenges you face and how you were received and all of that.
In Belize, it has been a man's world, and to some extent it still is, as is in most countries. When I, even in the economics that I studied, a lot of the students were male when I went to Gonzaga. You know, most of them were male. I feel that women leaders, and in my country, because it has been, you know, you're taught, and especially during my time, you know, to just be proper, be a lady. Sometimes they look at female as the weaker sex, and they still do. And physically, they are correct. Except if you meet China. China is now dead. She was in the World
She's
Wrestling Federation. China would have beat up some men. She was the exception. But yeah, Amazon. But to a great extent, women and me being a woman has been, you know, I've been in many rooms where I was the only female. As an economist, it was mainly males. Where I work, it was mainly males. Yes, we used to have we would have females, but it would mainly be the admin staff. Okay. As a trade union leader, I was the female leader, but the main leader. So not only female, but the main leader out there at the time as a trade union leader, but there were other strong men next to me, and a few, one or two strong females also, but they weren't really out there, I guess, because the media would come to me as a, because I was a lead negotiator, or because maybe I was actually a head of department in the government service, you know, so I was at a higher level than them. I'm not sure, maybe I was more highly educated. So they would come to me. So I was looked at as not just a female, but I guess as a leader, which helped. And I was such a staunch, I would say, courageous person from very young. From very young, I was always that. From very young. And it all had to do with having a strong mother, you know, and a very God-fearing father. So I always felt God had my back, and my mom taught me that yes, you could use your fists and all that. That's not good. That's not good. So she taught me that side, and my dad taught me the side, and my mom was a physical side, which was different, you know. So I had a mixture of that, and I was so bold and courageous all through. As a leader, I became the only female in many things. One, I was the first female registrar of cooperatives and credit unions. Now, what is a registrar of cooperatives and credit unions? You know what a credit union is? A credit union is actually a financial cooperative. So in Belize, we have many different groups. It has to have a minimum of 10 persons. Sometimes it has hundreds, thousands of people in it. And those are called cooperatives. So you have fishermen cooperatives, you have business cooperatives, you have credit unions, you have traffic transport cooperatives, bus cooperatives, all different cooperatives, women's cooperative, tourism cooperatives, you name it. And I was in charge of that. The first female. Now we had registrars. The registrar is just a regulator. He's a head of department in the government service, which is the highest level a public officer can reach at the head of department level. After that, it becomes political. And so I was the first woman to be, and I wasn't elected. I applied for the job and I competed against different men. I was just the more qualified, and I presented a plan, and those who interviewed felt I was the best person for the job, and I got the job, right? But they had been doing this from the 1940s and always male. So that was a first. So I became that. I became that in late. I was selected in late 2001, late 2001, but I started, I think, the first or the second week of February 2002. So I did that. So that was a first in terms of leadership. So with that, I was all over on the country, because you have cooperatives and credit unions all over the country. And I was leading with my staff, because I had a full staff throughout the country, offices throughout the country, in different districts, all the different districts. And I was there meeting with the manager, the board of directors of the different credit unions, cooperatives, and managing directors, and so forth, so forth. And we would be And I used to teach my staff certain things, and I also restructured the department. So I would go out there with my team, and then I would send them delegate, and we became a face all over the country, and also on TV, on the news, morning shows, things like that. No, so it weren't only meetings and those types of things, training. So I became also a household name in that sense. But after that, and then I also, as a leader, there's this thing called CASROC, right? CASROC is just a Caribbean Association of Regulators of Cooperatives. So that was a base in Trinidad. And you had all male registrars of cooperatives and credit unions. So again, I was the only female, but I think, and I always look at it and I say, I wouldn't want people to say I got elected because I was a female, because it wasn't that. I was smart. I was educated. I was very bold. I'm very confident. I'm very charismatic. Everybody tells me that. That's what I can tell you. And I have common sense. And I'm able to like look at certain situations and come up. I'm also a consultant, so you're able to look at different situations, countries, whatever it is, and see what you can do. And so based on that, they voted me as their president of the Caribbean Association, and the first woman president of the Caribbean Association of Registrars of Cooperatives, right? And regulators. So again, so that was another first. Then when I told you, a trade union leader, I was like one of the main, the highest level trade union leader who was also a woman out there leading. So again, that was a plus that helped. And then when I became the first woman mayor, so people were already used to seeing me, yes, a woman, but also as a fighter and a champion and a leader. And so the first woman mayor was just a, it just evolved easily, I think, you know, because people, I remember when I was campaigning, I remember I went, I campaigned certain areas and, you know, people really loved me. But there was this particular man who said, you know, he's not used to a woman being a leader, you know, like he's not used to a woman and this. And he said, but yeah, I'm going to vote for you because you don't, you're not just a woman. You're like, they had certain name and you guys probably, I don't know if you know this name. In Belize, you have different areas, just like all countries. And I'm sure in the US, you have certain countries, certain areas you call like it's like a little ghetto era. So I remember I was in this era and they call like leaders shatter. You're a shatter. So in Jamaica, you're a shatter, shatter. In US, you're a shatter. It just means you're a leader in like the ghetto, you know, but like you have that, it's not a thing. But it's like you have like you're street smart, you're ghetto, you know, you can survive there, you can be a leader there, you're a leader there. And so I remember them calling me a shatter. And it's not a bad thing because you need to be a leader everywhere. You can't just be a leader for the educated. You can't just be a leader for, no, you have to be a leader everywhere when you're a servant of the people. And I think that helped me. And after that, it just, you know, again, I was the first chairperson, elected chairperson of the Commonwealth Local Government Forum. So if you don't know what that is, that's comprised of all the Commonwealth country. It's a group and it's comprised of all the Commonwealth countries. And so it's at least at any given time 50, 51, 52, 53 different countries, depending, because sometimes one comes out for whatever reason, is suspended or whatever it is. And so I was elected, well, first as the vice president, vice chair in New Zealand. And then I was elected as the chair in the Bahamas. Again, you know, all the countries have to vote for you. I mean, and that didn't mean that people didn't challenge me. I did get challenged. I just won. You know, the more countries they voted for me. And then I won for a second term in Cardiff, Wales. So again, when I chair those sessions, also as a board. So not only as the main conference, but also as a board, it would mainly be mainly males also, mainly males. And again, you have to be very confident. You have to know what you're doing as well. So you can, you know, you can't fake it. You either know or you don't know. They don't play like that, you know? And I was also the only female. So many different meetings you'll see I'm the only female. And if I do have female, it would be like because I had my headquarters in London, right? So by Trafalgar Square, you know, we have our headquarters there. And so like my secretary general, he was a male, Carl Wright, but we are female. You know, she's a female, then my other staff would be female, most of them. So, but that's the thing. It would mainly be all males. But I could knock that. I just knew that, you know what? I can't worry about that. All I had to do was just try to build more females. So I would have more women conferences. I would try bring in more females, try to not only bring in, but show them. So like even in terms of being a speaker, a guest speaker, when it comes to the different breakout sessions and the different sessions, I would be one of the speakers and empower them and get more of them to be willing to step to the fray. So because some of them would be, well, the Commonwealth Local Government Forum is made up only of mayors, elected, of course, ministers of local government, prime ministers, and educated academias you're gonna have. So that's what it's mainly made up of. And they're elected, so it's mainly males. So growing up and still going through it was still mainly males, but I think and I saw that I was able to have more sessions and promote more sessions for female, and even in terms of projects for females as well, you know.
I've just been thinking about how many incredible things you've done and continue to do, and I'm wondering what out of everything in your impressive career you feel like has had the most impact or you are the most proud of.
That's a good question. That's a very good one. I've had I think that it would definitely have to be when I was able to help people. And so I think while, going out different parts of the world was good. It was I liked it, I must say. I think being at home and being able to help, and I've been fortunate enough to help not only as a public officer but also as a public official. So that's a good one because it would definitely have to be, I guess, as mayor, I got to do some projects to help people in the city. And in the inner city, as you very well know, most inner city need help, right? And that's where a lot of the decay is. Certain projects I try to do to help in those areas. And that's as much as I say that, I will say that I really appreciated some of the projects that I also did when I was a public officer and being in charge of certain poverty alleviation projects, because again, you got to help the marginalized. But to a great extent, it would definitely, it's between those. It had to do with helping. And like I told you, I studied economics for a reason. And even when I went to do my master's degree, it also, I carried that through and I focused in those areas. And it had to do with, economics and trying to help in the economic development of my country. So definitely, in the area of helping whatever projects and programs I could help, I would say that's where my that has left a more lasting impact in me. You know, they had even asked me to become a professor once, and
Really?
I just and it's a noble profession. They were asking me to teach at the University of Belize. But I guess at the time I wasn't ready, like I guess I wasn't, it wasn't in me. I could do like trainings, but I guess I wanted to do other things, but yeah, impactful because being a teacher, being a professor is one of the most impactful. Like everybody remembers their teachers, right? Everybody remember you guys. Everybody will remember. And that's so impacting because you're helping people, you're shaping their lives. And in the same way for me, whatever allowed me to help persons, like even when I was campaigning, I remember I would campaign and I would go at different houses And certain people would tell me, oh, Miss Moya, you don't need to come here. You don't need to come here. And oh my God, I'd be like, my heart sunk. And then they'd be like, you don't have to worry. Everybody in this house is gonna vote for you. And then they would give me some little reason why they would vote for me because, oh, well, maybe I was fighting for their rights, you know, or maybe when I was registrar of corporate credit unions, I was helping them, you know, in their, you know, business or their cooperative or something. I helped them to get certain benefits that the credit union wasn't giving them and they were to get, and I was the one that they went to and I ensured they got it, or I helped them here. And I'm like, I don't, yes, I know I did those things, but I don't know these, lots of these people I don't really know, you know. But it was impacting, and I guess that's the same thing with teachers, you know. It's the
Yeah,
impact that's lasting, you
well, you would
know.
be a great professor, and I agree. It's a privilege and an honor to be a professor.
Thank you. One of these days, one of these.
Yeah.
They asked me again recently.
Do it. Do it. It's
Yay, that'd be
fun.
great.
It's
Yes,
more
yeah.
work than you anticipate, but do it. It's
Yeah, I
very
can
rewarding.
imagine.
So we like to close the podcast with one final question, and
Sure.
that is, what advice do you have for Gonzaga students graduating and embarking on their next chapter of their life journey?
I would say that be a part of community, of the campus life and of the community life. Yes, you may come from, yes, some people attending Gonzaga will be from Spokane, Washington. And but even so, you can be a part of the community life, be a part of helping. There will be people needing help, right? And nothing is more heartwarming and impactful than giving back. Whether it's, hey, they could even be doing it through their own, they could even be doing it through their own, you know, maybe there's a group that they already belong to as a child, you know, Girl Scout. Like I was a Girl Guide. Maybe they're still a Girl Scout leader or whatever it is, but always think about ways that you can help. Be a part of that. Not only that, if you ever endeavor to work in particular areas, there are certain HR personnel and business owners or whoever leader, depending on what area you want to work in, because it could be with government, quasi-government, whatever. NGOs, whatever, they may very well look at what you did also in school. So even if you don't have any experience, professional work experience, the fact that you can put on your resume that you were a part of, you know, the student union, you know, of the newspaper, of whatever it is, of lacrosse, whatever, I don't know, basketball, whatever it is, you know, that you did, whatever, you will be able to say that you were a part of something other than just doing your studies, which is very important. But and you should look out for yourself. You should ensure that you do, you know, but there's more to it. And when it's said and done, all that you're gonna, at least, well, I was, let me speak for myself. What you will remember are your friends, those awesome professors, and you know, you're gonna remember what you did on campus or what you managed to, you know, contribute to in terms of that particular, you know, community, because that's what I remember. And you know, it's satisfying because it hones your skills and it hones every part of you to be a man or a woman for others. And that will help you because that will help you in terms of who you are as an individual, towards your family, towards your children. So not only your parents, if you have parents, your brothers, sisters, your siblings, whoever, but also to your family, your future husband, wife, whatever it is, and your community. So start being a man or a woman or a young person or a young woman or a young man for others from now. Don't wait until later on. To try and scramble and try, oh, I'm gonna put that on my resume. Oh, I need something. I need to put an extracurricular activity on my resume. So you do. No, and it also helps because take it from me, I won five different academic scholarships. And I didn't win it just based on my academic. I'm sure it's not only based on that. Yes, I did well. But it wasn't based only based on that. It also was based on giving back to the community and to the campus. So that's what I would advise everybody to do. And one last thing, you may see somebody that looks shy and probably don't fit in. Be like I was that to a guy who attended school here. He was not somebody who was out there. He was very shy. And he said it was until that I went to school there that I managed to get him out. Because he was like a little hermit in his room. And it was until he was from my country. It was until I went there and he saw how I was I would say the social butterfly, but I was out there and I tagged him along. And I took him here, I took him there, and I introduced him to all my friends. And that impacted him. And so you never know. You could be the reason that somebody has an even more awesome, memorable experience on campus.
That's lovely.
That's great.
Well, it was fantastic meeting you, and thank you for joining us. And hopefully you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you very much. And sorry for pulling you guys out because I think you had said it was going to be November. And
It was
I
my
went ahead
fault.
and said October 5th, So thank you too for accommodating me because Sunday is better for me because during the week, sometimes you never know calls or what have you, but at least today it's a
Course.
little bit slower,
Yeah,
So thank you
absolutely.
also, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right,
It's
good.
nice
You
to
take
know.
care. And
Yeah.
if Dr. John Beck, I mean, if you guys ever see him, or maybe you won't even remember, but I will tell you that he and I have other professors too that I really, but he was one of them that he really impacted. I took there were certain studies that he really, I took it, and as much as, I'm not saying I attended all his classes because sometimes, I did miss a few, but he made me want to go to school. And he was such a nice person. He just loved his studies, He was just an awesome person,
We'll see him tomorrow and we'll let him know.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, take care. Okay,
Ciao.
everybody. Thanks, Matt.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. Your hosts were Stephanie Van Dellen and Andrew Brassage. Edited by yours truly, Stuart Herringer.